Welcome, everyone, to episode 117 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to give brief updates from last time on the Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler situations. We're going to discuss whether Zaza Pachulia is an intentionally dirty player. And we're also going to talk about the Houston Rockets and Toronto Raptors and why either of them are legitimate threats to make the finals this year. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, it would go better if Kawhi had played all year long because I had him as my MVP going in.
Sure.
So I'm just going to start this thing off asking you a question here, because what would Kawhi need to average for the remainder of the season to win MVP? 120 points a game?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. If Joel Embiid could not win Rookie of the Year after playing 31 games and having numbers way better than anyone else, I mean... Kawhi Leonard, no, sorry, buddy. I think you got to move that MVP pick to next year.
I think it should still
be binding, though. Like, if he actually wins it next year because he, like, didn't play this year and only played 9 games so far, I'll still give you credit.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, okay. I can settle for partial credit.
Okay.
It's okay.
Good. Yeah, I'm going to claim partial credit if LeBron gets number 2 in the MVP voting, because James Harden seems to be running away with this thing.
Yeah, you just had Harden 1 year too early.
Yeah.
Properly.
I mean, maybe I had Harden the right year and people got infatuated with triple doubles, but that's neither here nor there. We've debated that plenty. Let's give a brief update on the Kawhi stuff. So last time we were under the impression Kawhi was done for the year. Greg Popovich said as much. Adrian Wojnarowski and Michael Wright of ESPN said it's basically Kawhi's call. He's been medically cleared, but it doesn't seem like he was going to be back. They reported yesterday, however, that he plans to resume working with the team this week at their practice facility with the hopes of returning by late March. What do you think about this? Because they would have, I mean, late March, you probably got 2 weeks and maybe 3 weeks before the start of the playoffs. Do you think it's worth the risk for the Spurs to bring him back? Or should they just say, you know what? Get like 105% confident in your body, come back next year, you know, let's not risk you aggravating this thing and us getting into a similar situation next season.
Well, that depends entirely on how he feels and how his body feels. Like, if he feels 105% ready to go, and if he feels ready by the end of March, then why not? I'm assuming that they will still be in the playoff hunt at that point. Mm-hmm. Still being the player of picture, so it would just make a lot of sense to follow through with it and have him return so they can make a push in the postseason and just hope that they avoid playing Zaza Pachulia.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if it was any other team, I would think it's a no-brainer he comes back, but this is the Spurs, who is they held out Tim Duncan, early...
In 2000.
Yeah. So... Yeah. It makes me think that they might still hold him out here. I mean, they have a 3.5 game lead right now on the Clippers. They're the 4th seed right now. The Clippers are the 9th seed. They're 3.5 games ahead. So they are still, I mean, we're assuming they will be in the playoffs. We don't know what seed they'll be. I guess it probably depends on what seed they get too. Like, if they slip to 7 right. or 8... I don't know if there's a point. Like, you're probably going to lose to the Rockets or the Warriors in the first round anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to bring him back and let him get reacclimated to the pace of the game and just make sure he can, you know, make it through 5-10 games and not aggravate this thing. If he's medically cleared, I guess so. But at this point, it just feels like there might be more harm than good in bringing him back this late in the season.
But we can't really know, though, regarding the seed, because if he returns in late March, there's a chance they could make a push.
Yeah.
And climb in the rankings.
That's true. I mean, I think if memory serves, their schedule is horrendous the rest of the way. Like, I think it's one of the harder ones among that 3-10 group. So, I mean, you know, they might, you're right, getting their best player back, they probably would make a push. But, you know, if they are, I guess we'll just have to kind of see over the next couple weeks where they fall in this picture once he's, if he's ready to return, once he's ready to return. You know, if they're three games behind the sixth seed at that point, it's like you're either going to get Houston or Golden State. You're probably going to get knocked out in the first round.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I love what San Antonio's done this year, but there's no comparison at this point. I mean, they're just too thin, and yeah. Kawhi would need time to get back to his usual self. I mean, when we said 105% ready, we're talking about his body being ready. Mm-hmm. There's also like a lot of questions about timing and acclimation and all that. So, more than likely he's not going to be the Kawhi of old until next season anyway. I'm just the type of guy who prefers to see players back so they have a little bit of court adjustment going into next season.
Sure.
So if he returns and he just gets a couple games under his belt, like, he can carry that with him into the summer and go, oh, okay, it was nice just getting out there and, you know, get reacclimated to the court before I attack my summer.
Mm-hmm. And there's also the question of, you know, Woj has been reporting for a month now that this injury situation has strained the relationship between him and the Spurs. So if he does feel ready and he does want to come back and the Spurs overrule him and say no, that could put additional strain on that relationship.
But do you think they would? It seemed like Pop was almost annoyed that he didn't play. So I think that, and I don't think Pop would ever do that. Like, when it comes to roster decision, or not roster decision, but rotation decisions, and that's all on Pop. And I don't think Pop at any point would go to like the lower lengths of saying, oh, well, I have a problem with your stance, so I'm going to hold you out. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not him. He's like, if you're ready and you want to play and we can get on the same page, let's go.
I mean, wasn't that the case with Duncan? Like, wasn't he healthy enough to play? And didn't he want to play? And Pop still held him out?
That was in 2000, though. That was 18 years ago. I think Pop has grown in 18 years.
But, like, that might have been the smart decision back then. I mean, look at how long Tim Duncan had, you know, was a Hall of Fame level player. Like, the Spurs strike me as an organization. It's just in their philosophy to be extremely careful with their players' like minutes load, and if you know they're cautious about injuries, especially these lingering injuries. So I wouldn't be shocked if they at least push back on him coming back. But
it's a fair point, because like Tim flirted with Orlando that summer,
right?
And I assume partly because he was a little stung by that decision by the Spurs, but ultimately, he realized what was good for his career, and he returned, and it was a beautiful marriage. So, I'm hoping that Tim is in Kawhi's ear a little bit.
Yeah,
that's I have a feeling at some point we're gonna get a Lee Jenkins story out of all this.
Oh yeah.
I can just imagine their phone conversations, like Tim and Kawhi, just be like, "Hey, hey, so you're not playing? No, okay." Okay. Talk later? Yeah.
That sounds right. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how this develops over the next month. Because Pop did, even when he spoke with reporters last week, he said, I wouldn't be surprised if Kawhi didn't play this year. But he didn't say the San Antonio Spurs have ruled Kawhi Leonard out for the rest of the season.
Exactly. Exactly.
And a reporter even asked him that. And he was like, I'm saying what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying that I don't think he will come back. They said, like, is the organization ready to rule him out for the rest of the year? And Pop did not say yes. So,
right.
You know, it's an interesting storyline in this final month and a half of the season. We could possibly see Kawhi Leonard back. But you know who we will see back more is Jimmy Butler. Because we talked last time when we recorded on Saturday, right after they announced it was a meniscus injury. they, at that point, were still deciding how to treat it. It sounds like, according to Shams Charania of Yahoo Sports, he's got a timeline to return of 4 to 6 weeks, which implies he went with the meniscectomy instead of the meniscus repair. Again, quicker timetable to return often has long-term complications. That's the same thing that Dwayne Wade had, which he blames on like all of his knee problems now. So hopefully, knock on wood, Jimmy Butler will not regret this decision 5 years down the line. But what do you think of it, Mort? Do you think it was like, do you think we, again, we don't know what the treatment options are, like we're not
right.
Jimmy's doctor here, so I don't want to say like, did Jimmy make the right choice in undergoing the meniscectomy? Like, maybe he didn't have a choice, and maybe the removal was the only option instead of a repair. But
right,
what do you think about just the Timberwolves over the next month without Jimmy? And then how seriously do you take them now that he is probably going to be back? I mean, even if he's out for 6 weeks, he should still be back by the start of the playoffs.
Right. So, just to recap, we want Kawhi to return, but Jimmy, that's a different story because of the treatment choice. Mm-hmm. None of us wants to see Jimmy suffer any long-term consequences like Dwayne did. Mm-hmm. And Dwayne himself has been out and say, you know, that was the one regret that I had mm-hmm. over the course of my career was to get it fixed that way. I should have sat out mm-hmm. instead and thought of the long-term. The thing with Jimmy is he's a high minute player, and he's a guy who handles the ball a lot. Like, everything is put on his shoulders. You can see, like, he was the heart of the Timberwolves this year. Mm-hmm. So what I'm nervous about is him coming back this year and having to once again be Mr. Everything for him, and then for him to be in that same role 3, 4, 5 years down the line as well, because that's when those complications can arise. He's played more or less 15,000 career minutes, and that's just the regular season. That's not even counting playoffs. Mm-hmm. So it's not an insane number of minutes, but it's a good chunk, and he's not exactly getting younger. So I'm kind of nervous. If he delivers the same kind of impact this year, that would certainly boost Minnesota. Potentially past the first round if he returns, it gets reacclimated to the court and his teammates and all that. But I don't know. It's hard for me to sit here and predict what Jimmy is going to do because we just don't know. It's a significant injury, so it's a tough question. So instead, I'm going to answer what I think about the Timberwolves with Jimmy out, and I'm not overly optimistic. And you know why. Everyone who listens to this podcast knows why. And I don't want to sit here because it feels like I'm always crabbing on Wiggins. And I want to get a little bit away from that. That's not my point. It's just I feel you are going to ultimately overburden Wiggins with so much responsibility now that Jimmy's out. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. I would rather see that burden go to Towns and Teague and the bench guys, honestly, more minutes for Jamal, more minutes for Shabazz Muhammad, guys like that. I want to see this become a team that sort of goes against this idea of, oh, we have top three guys that we need to just run into the ground. No, now it needs to be a cohesive unit going 7 or 8 deep where they all pick up the slack from Jimmy, and then when Jimmy returns, they ease him back into it, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. Knowing Jimmy, I have a feeling that's not going to be possible. He's just going to return. He's going to give me the ball.
Right.
Give me the ball.
Right.
But we'll see.
Yeah. That was a fun look into Bulls Twitter the other night, too, with that guy who was tweeting us about Jimmy Butler being overrated. And
I've dealt with him before. So just to tell that story, there's a guy, I don't remember his Twitter handle because I don't care.
Right.
He's for years and years, he's been in every Bulls blogger's mentions, and he's more or less made the point that Jimmy Butler would not average 10 points in the NBA if he was not getting a lot of fake fouls, because getting to the free throw line and all, and he thinks the vast majority of the calls that Jimmy gets are not accurate. So he's He's hell-bent. He's willing to die on that hill that Jimmy Butler would not be able to score 10 points in an NBA game if the officiating was accurate. So that's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It was an impressive hill to die on. I'll give him that.
It is, especially over the amount of years that this guy's kept going. It's, I'm not even mad. Right? I'm impressed.
I didn't know that those people were out there, but good.
Oh, yeah. He believes Derrick Rose is still an MVP candidate. Right. There are still those people out there.
Yeah. But to your point about the Timberwolves, I'm just going to read you the minutes from their game last night against the Kings. Towns had 39, Wiggins 37, Taj Gibson 35, Bielica, who's moved into the starting lineup in place of Jimmy Butler at 34, Jeff Teague had 33. The bench was only Crawford 24, Jeng 22, Tyus Jones 15, and Aaron Brooks and Cole Aldridge played 1 minute each. So I agree with you in that I would love to see them become more well-rounded. Shabazz Muhammad did not play last night. I just think this is the way Tibbs is going down. He's going to go down his way with an 8-man rotation. He's going to ride his dudes into the ground. So before we move on, I do want to ask you this. Two questions quickly, I guess. Let's assume both Jimmy and Kawhi come back. Who do you think is the third best team in the West? And B, does anyone, even among Minnesota, San Antonio, does anyone have a chance of knocking off either Houston or Golden State? Or should we just pencil that conference finals in right now?
I think we should pencil that in all right now, honestly. So it doesn't matter what I think, where they land. I will say it's just such a tough ride for both, you know, San Antonio, Minnesota being right there. Mm-hmm. Had the Spurs had Kawhi healthy all year long and had Jimmy not gone down, I think that would have been an extremely interesting top four for the West to go into the playoffs with. I mean, Golden State, Houston, Minnesota, San Antonio. That's an intriguing top four, and then you have all those wild cards in Portland and. Hey, man, the Pelicans are right there right now.
Yeah.
And a wild card in OKC, maybe Denver. I mean, that. I really hope on some level that next year this is going to be the same sort of format in terms of the teams involved, because the way that the Western Conference playoffs is shaping up right now, at least amongst the teams that's involved, that looks mighty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you'll add the Lakers when they get LeBron and Paul George, too.
Oh, yeah, right. And DeMarcus Cousins also, obviously. Yeah.
Okay, boy, let's move on from that. Let's talk about Zaza, since you brought him up earlier. He got into yet another controversial play the other night, I believe Saturday, when they were playing OKC. Russell Westbrook fell to the ground, and it looked like Zaza, he might have gotten clipped, I think, by Nick Young. He like might have gotten hit in the back of the leg, but in real time and even on a bunch of the replays, it looked like Russ fell down, and then Zaza, without any provocation, just kind of clumsily fell on top of Russ's legs. And naturally, Russ, after the game, was really pissed, said, you know, he just like, look at his history, basically. Like, yes, it was dirty. Kyrie Irving on Instagram said the NBA needs to take a look at this. You know, as you alluded to more, with Kawhi last year, Zaza stepped on his foot, hurt his ankle, and he was out for the rest of that series. Do you think all of these things suggest that Zaza's a dirty player? Or do you really, like, a lot of his teammates came to his defense, Kevin Durant included, and just said, like, he's basically just a big clumsy idiot? Which side
are you? I think there's some truth in that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think there's definitely truth in him being a clumsy, I don't want to say idiot. I don't know the man, but he's definitely clumsy. But it is possible to be clumsy and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think the Westbrook thing is the best example to bring up as a term of him being dirty, because that was not as intentional, I think, as it was against Kawhi last year.
Mm-hmm.
This was him. He could have done more to get out of the way. Of course he could have.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think this was him being completely evil-minded on like last year, that was him at his most clumsiest, and just that personality of his where he doesn't really give a damn, and he just lands where he lands, and whatever happens, happens. So I think both statements are true. I think he is dirty by heart, and I think he is clumsy as well, which is just a bad cocktail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think, you know, Kevin Durant coming out and saying, oh, I don't take that seriously, because that's his teammate. He has to say those things. Right. If he had still played on the Thunder and that had happened, he would have been in Russ's defense immediately. So I can't really take what teammates are saying that seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like a fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you situation, where you're right. I don't know. That this Russ thing was the worst thing he's ever done, but now like it's an accumulation of incidents that after a while you just have to start wondering, like, really, all of these are unintentional? But that said,
I don't think this one was unintentional. I just I don't think he didn't do everything he could to get out of the way is what I'm saying. Like, I don't think when he fell down on Russ, I don't think he was going through, oh, I'm going to hurt this as some old bitch, right? I don't think he was thinking that. I just think he went down and then just, oh, I'm going to fall on Russ. And
but like he we're going to get up afterwards. He didn't need to fall. He wasn't...
Right.
He was, like, planted solidly on the ground. And then he just kind of, like, stumbled and went right on his legs. Like, it looked bad. I mean, I don't, you know, we'll never know for sure, but... It didn't look like he needed to fall. And then all of a sudden, like, big man goes down and right on his legs. And you're right, Mort. Like, he could put his hands out and, like, brace himself for the fall. No, he just went, like, right on. He
could have done a lot of things.
Yeah, he just dropped 250 pounds on Russell Westbrook's knees.
Yeah. No, it's a bad thing. And it's... he's a weird guy. I can never get... I can never get, like, a proper idea of who he is, like, how he's wired, because he can have games where there's no, like, there isn't even a brief moment of controversy surrounding him, where he's just playing hard, doing everything, and then out of nowhere, he does these completely malicious things. Like, he's, you know, with different players, you always have, you see some of it, like, if you go all the way back to Dennis Rodman, of course, like, you would see him already at the beginning of games, like, poke a little bit here and there, and then things would kind of escalate. Like, Zaza just quits the middleman there. He just goes for the straight escalation point where that reaches. It's just weird. He's a weird guy.
Yeah. In his own defense, even his own teammates are not safe, because he was the one who banged into Kevin Durant's knee in that last year.
Oh, that's right.
Almost knocked KD out for the year, so... Maybe. I mean, I think you're right, Mort. I think there is some clumsiness involved. I don't think... I don't want to say he's, like, 100% malicious, but it does feel... Again, it just feels like... Especially the Russ thing. That just seemed beyond clumsy. It seemed a little dirty, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and hey, look, he's 34, so we can hope that he says after this season that... He's done.
Calling it quits, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I don't think anyone would mind.
No, for the sake of knees everywhere. Like, God forbid him and Joel Embiid meet in an NBA final someday. I would just, oh, man, have to clutch a rosary the entire time. Speaking of the Sixers, Mort, we should talk about their newest addition. The Atlanta Hawks have reached a buyout agreement with Ersan Ilyasova. When he clears waivers, he is reportedly signing with the 76ers, with whom he played last year as well. It was after the trade deadline. They also signed, was it? Yeah, it was after the trade deadline before the All-Star break. They signed Marco Bellinelli as well. So that is two free agents, Mort, that they brought in. I just want to shout out everyone who in the last 4 years said the Sixers' toxic losing culture meant they were never going to attract a free agent again. Good job on you, everyone. Great takes.
Easy. It's Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova. It's not LeBron James yet.
Yet.
Relax. Yet. I've said yet, but that's because that's a segue for later.
Yeah. But more.
Yeah.
How do you think those guys are going to move the needle for the Sixers at all?
I actually do.
Yeah.
Usually when you get players like Ersan Ilyasova, and Marco Bellinelli, and you look at them as sort of bit players, mm-hmm. you know, guys who can play 20 minutes and back up a position, start here and there and break glass in case of emergency kind of situations. But the two of them combined are very decent shooters. They are solid veterans. They, from everything I've heard, they're great locker room personalities as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that does move the needle. Now you have a guy who can come in and shoot, which I think is a proper way to sub out Ben Simmons mm-hmm. more. So you can play a lineup that has Marco, Ersan, Embiid, Saric, I mean, and Redick, theoretically. So that's a lot of shooting. So when it becomes necessary, Philly can go on this five-out attack when it's necessary, mm-hmm. which I like. I like that sort of flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, their bench has been horrendous all year. Like, their starters have been phenomenal, especially once Dario moved into the starting lineup. And then they go to their bench and this is the thing they do. They build these 20, 25-point leads. Their bench comes in and it just goes poof. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think Marco has already made a notable impact in the couple of games he's played with them. He's been a great three-point shooter off the bench. Ersan, as I mentioned, played with the Sixers last year. I mean, people around Sixers Twitter are somewhat lukewarm on Ersan signing because he had a permanent green light last year. So I think people are just having flashbacks to him shooting like 11 three-pointers a game, which I do not expect to be the case now that they actually have real NBA talent on the team. But the Ersan-Embiid combo was actually pretty potent last year. Yeah, as you mentioned, more the shooting especially is going to be huge for them. Mm-hmm. So if this means their bench stops coughing up leads, it's interesting. I saw I forget who on Twitter. I'm not going to say his name right, but Bob Vulgaris, the gambling guy, said the other day that he thought the Sixers had the third best roster on paper in the East. Which I thought was really interesting. Because, you have as you said, Mort, a Bellinelli and Ilyasova are not, you don't want to rely on those dudes for 35 minutes a game, but as 15, 20, 25 minutes off the bench, I mean, I think we talked about it last time, Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot has been not totally disappointing, but he's been inconsistent, I'll say that much. We don't actually know who they're going to waive. Alex Kennedy of Hoops Hype reported it's probably going to be Trevor Booker, which just makes the most sense because his contract is expiring and he and Ilyasova play the same position. But yeah, it's just going to having that many shooters at your disposal should really help the Sixers stop blowing so many goddamn leads, which is exciting.
Yep.
But
It's unfortunate, though, with Booker, because we both loved that addition.
Yeah.
It hadn't exactly panned out in the way that it probably should, but he's still a very solid veteran, so yeah. I'm sure that he's going to get picked up somewhere.
Definitely.
I mean, he's not going to be on the market for long.
No.
Spurs? Hi, Spurs.
Yeah.
He could use him.
Yeah. I mean, so the deadline, I believe, is March 1st for someone to get waived, and they can be eligible to join a playoff team. So I'm assuming... I mean, we're recording this on February 27th. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Sixers are making this move now. I think they're going to do right by whoever they waive, presumably Booker, but they're going to do it before that March 1st deadline so he can latch on with another team. And yep. Kennedy said there's a lot of interest in Booker. It wouldn't surprise me at all, as you said, Mort. See him whichever team has an open roster spot, Spurs, Warriors, Rockets... Cavaliers. The Cavs do.
Probably not Houston, though.
Yeah, I mean, Houston's got plenty, I guess. I don't know if they have an open roster spot. The Cavs do, though, right?
Not sure, but if they do, that would definitely be a guy who can come in and play the tough guy role a little bit more.
Yeah, especially while Kevin Love is out.
Yeah.
It's going to be, yeah.
And who could even take minutes from Tristan Thompson and show that, you know, he's actually... got balls.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see where he ends up. But I'm not going to jinx it yet. The Sixers are five games up on the Pistons now, so I'm starting to feel a little bit confident in their chances of making the playoffs, but they, as they proved against the Bulls the other night, they are still not immune to almost blowing leads against terrible teams. And they have a bunch of terrible teams left on their schedule, so if they take care of business, they're in, but they're still a young, dumb team. Let's pivot more. Let's talk about good teams now. We haven't, I think you mentioned this an episode or two ago, we have not given the Toronto Raptors nearly enough love for what they've done this year. They are currently, right. This is, again, this is Tuesday, February 27th. So as of now, they are the number one team in the Eastern Conference at 42-17. They have a half game lead over the Boston Celtics. They are 7 games ahead of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So even if Boston overtakes them, they are going to have home court advantage in the first 2 rounds of the playoffs, assuming they get past the first round. How do you feel about the Raptors, Mort? Do you think they're a legit threat to make the finals this year?
I think there are areas in their game where they are they've simply improved to the point where you can't really ignore them, because like if you look at their 3-point shooting, which was always sort of suspect, partly because of DeMar DeRozan. Like, they're 7th in the league right now in makes and 6th in attempts from behind the arc. They're not fantastic efficiency-wise. They're currently 20th in the league in three-point field goal percentage, so they need to convert a little bit more. But the fact that they're taking them at a much higher rate just gives the entire defense that they're up against a different look, allowing them for more drives and whatnot. Now you come to the free throw department, where they're 2nd in the league in free throw percentage, hitting almost 81. That's huge, because if you have a team that collectively can hit free throws, especially in the playoffs, that's just squeezing out a lot of points. Then we go to the blocks department, where they're 2nd, and that's partly because of Serge Ibaka and a collective group that has decent shot blocking ability. Now, obviously, shot blocking is not necessarily a stat that indicates true defensive value, but it is something that teams look at. If you are a strong shot blocking team, well, opponents know that going in, and they might hesitate going to the rim. And the final thing is, they are pretty low on the turnovers department. They're 3rd in the league in protecting the basketball. When they do that, what they've done here is they've secured themselves a whole new way of functioning. They are now a low turnover team, so you can count on them to protect the ball. They are no longer this hesitant long-range shooting team, so now they're getting these looks, and you can't foul them because they're going to convert at the free throw line. Those are just incredible changes from the dynamic they used to have, where it was very ISO ball, and it was very reliant on, well, we should get to the line a whole lot, but that's really our only offensive way to be efficient, because the three ball isn't there. We're relying way too much on Kyle Lowry for that. So they have this sort of identity now, which I really appreciate from them going in, because in years past, that what was their identity, really? It was, oh, they're here, they're sort of good, but we don't really know a whole lot about them. It seems they've come closer to finding out who are they as a basketball team, and what do they do well, where can they hang their hats. So I'm really digging Toronto this year. And look, I've been crapping on them for not giving Jonas Valanciunas more minutes. I'm still not at that point where I feel he's playing enough, but at least they're using him better now than they were at the beginning of the season. So he's sort of found his way throughout the course of the year. 22 minutes a game is still, in my mind, about 5 to 7 minutes at least too low. And if I had my way, it'd be 32 minutes. But whatever works at this point. And they found a way to keep Jonas engaged. He's shooting threes. He's hitting three throws. He's rebounding. He's scoring. It just kind of works, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, to your point about them not knowing their identity last year, I feel like their identity was ISO ball, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, last year they had, this is according to Synergy Sports on NBA.com, 8.5% of their plays last year were isolations. That was the 6th most in the league. This year, they're down to 5.5%, which is tied for the 6th fewest.
I mean, yeah, that's a huge turnaround.
Yeah, it doesn't sound, I mean, a 3 percentage point dip doesn't sound all that impressive, maybe, but I mean, isolation is one of the least effective ways of scoring in the NBA. So right. for them to pivot that much into, hey, we're actually going to pass the ball and, you know, try to generate offense using real plays instead of bail us out DeMar DeRozan, bail us out Kyle Lowry. Like, that's what often came back to bite them in the playoffs. And that's what Masai Ujiri said last year after the playoffs. He said, we need to find a new way of looking at things. This one-on-one ball is not working. It's been our downfall for the last couple of years. So at the time, we just weren't sure if that was, you know, just a frustrated general manager speaking, and they would come back and run the same system, and then the same thing would happen. They really, truly have changed the way they do things. And I think that's, you know, the common refrain with Toronto is, well, haven't we been here before? They've been the top three seed. We see what happens when they get to the playoffs. Why do we believe in them? Like, we'll believe it when we see it. But, right. I mean, this is a different Toronto team than we've seen in years past. Like, we should not think just because they are wearing the same uniform and they have the same names on the back that this is the same type of Toronto team. Like, this team, they're the only team aside from the Golden State Warriors to be top five in both offensive and defensive rating right now.
That's saying something. I want to give the two of us a little bit of credit, though, because you and I had a feeling that the addition of CJ Miles was going to change the way that they play. And that was accurate, because they had Corey Joseph. That was part of the deal. Well, it actually wasn't a trade. Corey Joseph was just... they signed CJ Miles, and then Indiana... Was that a trade? Did Indiana sign Corey Joseph, or was it a trade?
Yeah, I don't remember if they... I think it was originally reported as a sign and trade, and then they might have backed out on that and just done it as two separate transactions,
yeah,
if memory serves correctly. But yeah, I mean, it was ultimately whether it was called a trade, it was just a swap of Corey Joseph for CJ Miles.
Exactly, and Corey Joseph, I love Corey Joseph,
yeah,
but he's not a high-volume three-point shooter. He's more of a floor general who can break down a defense and get it into the lane. And there is definite value in having that, but not necessarily on a team where DeMar DeRozan is on it, because he does it to a much better extent and to a much higher degree. So having a guy like CJ Miles who can just bomb away from three on high volume, and like I'm just looking over his numbers right now, per 36 minutes, Miles is taking 12.3 threes a game. Like, he's jacking though. He's playing at just over 18 minutes a ball game and shooting 6.3 a game. So he's jacking up threes and hitting them at 38.5%, which is completely fine. That's a fine percentage. That gives them more looks. It gives them an opportunity to play a little bit of UCLA type basketball, driving kick.
Yeah.
Because those kickouts, they become valuable. You have Kyle spotting up, you have CJ spotting up. Now you kind of have Jonas Valanciunas a little bit spotting up. Obviously, Serge Ibaka can shoot. You have OG Anunoby who can shoot. Even DeLon Wright, who's come in sort of out of nowhere after being benched for so long, is hitting almost 30 on the three ball. So it's just a different dynamic, and I kind of like it. What I'm really impressed about is Norman Powell has not really delivered this year.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be instrumental in whatever turnaround they were planning, they did it without him.
Right.
Sort of. Like, he was a part of it. He's a part of the rotation, but
yeah.
He's not like necessarily a major positive impact player right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of one of the... Well, on the Miles point first, he's only shooting 39.8% overall, but like, what, 75% of his shot attempts are from deep. So that is making his overall field goal percentage look worse than he's actually playing.
Oh yeah, his true shooting percentage is 57.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
but to your overall point, yeah, about Powell, and just I think that's another one of their major strengths, is that they go a legit 11 deep. I mean, and 12 if you want to include Bebe Nogueira in there as well.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's that I guess that's it's a strength for now. During the playoffs, when rotations tighten, I guess you could take it either as a positive or a negative. Like, maybe they just continue running their rotations as they have now. The only two guys on the Raptors who are above 30 minutes per game are DeRozan at 34 and Kyle Lowry at 32.1. And then Serge Ibaka is at 27.8. And then the next one is Valanciunas at 22.1. He's their fourth leading minutes getter. Like, they have a bunch of guys in that 15 to 25 range. They have eight. Oh, yeah,
they're fresh.
Yeah.
Like, they are so fresh coming into the playoffs. This cannot be understood. I'm so glad you brought that up. This is going to be the freshest team when the playoffs begin.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Like, from top to bottom, these guys are going to have the best legs coming. I'm sounding like Trump here. These guys are going to have the best legs. But that it's true. They are.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's... In some way, the freshness will help. In some way, you know, if Dwayne Casey suddenly goes to a 7 or 8 deep rotation, you know, the depth suddenly becomes less of a selling point as to why the Raptors can make the finals. Because, you know, then Jakob Poeltl gets bumped out of the rotation or Norman Powell gets bumped out of the rotation. But I kind of think he's just going to keep going the way he has. Like, I think the reason Valanciunas isn't playing as much as both of us would like is because Jakob Poeltl is playing well and Pascal Siakam is playing well. Like, they have a bunch of guys who they can rely on for 15, 20, 25 spot minutes. Like Fred VanVleet, who we haven't mentioned. Yep. He's shooting 41% from three almost. Like,
yeah, Fred's been good.
Yeah, they have a bunch. Like, none of these guys are nationally recognized, well-renowned names, which I think is probably the reason a lot of them are flying under the radar. But, like, they have just a bunch of role players playing very well, which could come, you know, if CJ Miles has an off game, all right, cool, call on OG, or call on Van Vliet, or call on DeLon Wright. Yep. Like, they have so many options at their disposal. So the reason I asked this, Mort, is because I was looking at ESPN's BPI playoff odds, which are based off of the basketball power index that they run. And naturally, I was looking at this because I was nervous about the Sixers, who, according to that, have
of course
98.9% chance of making the playoffs. The thing that caught my eye was Toronto has a 24.1% chance of winning the NBA title, according to that. The next closest team in the East is Boston at 3.8%.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, whatever code is going into the BPI really likes Toronto's chances, not only of making the finals, but of beating the Warriors or the Rockets.
I mean, I'm probably not going to take it that far, but I want to say that they are hitting, as I alluded to previously, they're hitting on the right elements.
Yeah.
They are, like, they're shooting threes. They're blocking shots. They're not turning the ball over. They're hitting the free throws. Like, these are some of the staple things in an offense that they just sort of took care of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought up Jakob Poeltl because he's been excellent. Like, this dude is so efficient, shooting 65% from the field. Like, he's very selective about his shots. And I'm glad that he is because he's in a role that allows him to be because he's flanked by so many shooters. So it just makes sense for him to not force the issue. And he's understanding this in his second season. Like, okay, I'm going to take the shots available to me when they come, when they arise. Mm-hmm. If that means I'm only going to take 2 shots tonight, then so be it. If I get 11 the other night, it's fine. That's the way it is. I'm going to convert.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great shot blocker. I'm not sure the defense is quite there yet, but I'm getting sort of a Steven Adams vibe from him a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I like. I don't think he's going to be as impactful of defender.
Right.
But I could imagine him being somewhat having a similar impact down the line, maybe just in a different direction, like as a scorer instead.
Mm-hmm.
But in conclusion, though, when you look at Toronto right now, you also look at there's only one guy, DeRozan, who shoots more than 15 times a game. The second on that list is Kyle Lowry at only 12.5. So this offense is spread out. There's a little bit of a 2004 Pistons vibe to this team in terms of the shot distribution,
yeah,
which I really like, because when you only have one guy who takes like 18, and 18 is not really a lot of shots when you think about it,
right?
Because there are a lot of guys out there who take more.
Yeah.
That means that you are going to come into a game and you're going to be unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
The defense is not going to be sure where those shots are going to come from.
Yeah.
Like we've seen games where DeMar DeRozan takes 30 plus. We've also seen him where he takes 12 plus, and that's just about like 12 to 15 shots.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens in the flow of the of an offense, and Toronto has figured that out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think at this point it is safe to say if you going into the playoffs, the Toronto Raptors deserve to be considered the top dog. I mean, I know Boston has been right along with them this whole season, and LeBron James in the playoffs is a completely, you know, he turns it on, and as will the Cavs. But I think it's reasonable to buy in on the Raptors this year. I don't think this is the same old Raptors. I think they have a very legitimate chance. As you said, Mort, I'm probably not picking them against the Rockets or the Warriors in the finals, but it wouldn't shock me at all if they get there.
No, me neither. And look, here's the thing. I think the situation would have been different if Gordon Hayward hadn't gone down. Then I think Boston would so supremely have been number one.
Yeah.
That we would have mentioned Toronto sort of like, oh, they're not Boston, but look at what they've done. It's great.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate to beat Boston this year. And I even believe I saw a tweet the other day. I don't know if it was Danny Ainge or Brad Stevens. Someone sort of confirmed, you know, Gordon is not going to return this year.
Yeah.
Don't get your hopes up. Yeah. So next year, it's going to be a different picture, I think, when it comes to the playoffs. I don't expect Toronto to necessarily lead the pack next year.
Mm-hmm.
But given that this year that they have and Gordon did win down and all that, I think they are very deserving of the number one.
Yeah. Well, next year the Sixers will be number one when LeBron comes to them.
Oh my God, you are unbelievable. You never improve.
I'm gonna ride that train until it derails on July 1st. Let's go. Or I guess July 8th, because LeBron is definitely not gonna decide on the first day of free agency.
Oh no, he's on vacation.
Yeah. All right, let's pivot to the other side of the Western Conference now. Because you know we've all assumed since the beginning of the year that the Golden State Warriors are going to win the NBA championship. They're right there. They're not at the level that we expect them to be at in June. But I mean they're going to cruise at least to the conference finals in the West, where they are likely, mm-hmm. as we said earlier this episode, to meet the Houston Rockets. Where do you think the Rockets have a chance of knocking out the Warriors in a 7-game series?
So before I answer that, I am just going to tell you something here or read up a stat or what have you. But there's a backstory. So I'm an old internet message board guy. I started signing up for message board all the way back in 2003, mm-hmm. back on the Real GM forums. And I was there for many, many years. And one of the things, whenever we would discuss players, we always had this thing of going... We were looking at 3-point field goal attempts and free throw attempts. Like if you were a superstar, one of the most important components back then, that was prior to this new age NBA,
mm-hmm.
it was you should have more free throw attempts than you should have 3-point attempts, because mm-hmm. that would just make you a more efficient player. Okay. That was the thinking at the time.
Yep.
So,
oh no.
Let's look at James Harden. James Harden is averaging 10.1 free throw attempts per game,
uh-huh.
which is that's insane. Yeah. That's insanity. That's so good. And yet he has more 3-point field goal attempts per game.
Man.
10.6. That's crazy. That's wonderful, because that new age, obviously, that old line of thinking that's no longer valid. Right. Things have changed. You know, you've gotten more informed. But that just caught my eye. Like, when you look at a guy averaging 10 free throw attempts, you're obviously going, oh, that's like that's tops. Like, you can't do anything better than that. That's amazing. Obviously, that's wildly efficient. And you just, your eye scrolled to the 3-point stats, and it's just like, oh, 10 and a half. Okay, sure. New age NBA definition right there.
Yeah.
James is just an unbelievable unbelievable talent. And to have him average 31.5 points, 9 assists, 5 boards, almost 2 steals, be as efficient as he is, and still have the presence of mind of not being selfish and allowing a guy like Chris Paul, who has always been ball dominant, mm-hmm. to come in, and he himself averaged 19-8. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic to me. That proves that they have a camaraderie and an understanding and a mission, that everyone is on the same page. Mm-hmm. And it's so clear that when you look at that team, also from the bench and the starting lineup, the defined roles of I'm a three-point shooter, I'm a screener and a roller, mm-hmm. I'm a defender, I'm a rebounder, I'm this, I'm that, my roles are this and this and that. They get it. And whether or not they can beat out Golden State, I'm not going to say that they can, mm-hmm. but I'm also not as confident in Golden State as I would be if the Houston Rockets weren't in the conversation, because I still have them highest,
sure.
Golden State, that is.
Yeah.
But the margin has lessened significantly over recent months.
See, I would say the Rockets can beat the Warriors. Would I pick them right now? Probably not. I mean, it's still right. The Warriors.
That's how I feel.
But, like, yeah. Of any team in the West, I mean, I feel like the Rockets are really the only team that could beat the Warriors. I know there was talk about, the Thunder, they were up. They beat them both in their first two regular season matchups, and they match up well against them, and then they get waxed by 32 points on national TV. Like, it's not happening for the Thunder. The Thunder are too inconsistent. Without Andre Roberson, they just don't have the defense to shut them down. The Rockets...
Agreed.
I mean, Daryl Morey has just, he's been completely out in the open about this all year. He has designed this team with the Warriors in mind. Like, they're going to focus more on offense than defense. They are second behind the Warriors in offensive rating. Their defense is still top 10. I mean, they're ninth right now, but the Warriors are fifth. I mean, the Warriors are a little bit better than them on that end of the floor. But as you said, Morin, I mean, Harden is playing. I mean, Harden is the MVP front runner right now. Chris Paul, I mean, if the All-Star game, if they didn't require all those dudes who got hurt, if they didn't require replacements from the Eastern Conference, Chris Paul would have made the All-Star game. I mean, he's, as you said, averaging 19-8, almost 6 rebounds, 2.5 threes, almost 2 steals a game.
It's amazing.
He's missed 18 games, but I mean, he's playing at just his all-star Chris Paul level. I mean, remember before the season started and there was like, are they going to be willing to share the ball together? Is that going to be an issue? No, that narrative died like 2 games into the season. They've just, the way he meshed is incredible. I mean, Trevor Ariza, he's streaky, but he's still shooting nearly 39% from the 3-point range. He's a good defender, but really valuable against a guy like Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
They just added Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright, both of whom will be good. I mean, they said Wright's just going to kind of be insurance depth in the front court, but Joe Johnson's already playing. He's played 4 games. He's averaging 28 minutes a game. I think that just his veteran experience there, and he's still a useful scorer. I mean, I know people in Utah hated him, but in this Houston system, I think he's going to do well. It feels sort of like a souped-up version of the Raptors. Like, they have their top 2 guys in Harden and Paul.
Yeah.
They have
that's a good way.
Clint Capella, who is a phenomenal player in his own right and could really give the Warriors trouble. I mean, that's long been their one theoretical weakness, is just, you know, they don't have a star center unless Zaza hurts Clint Capella, and then it's going to be an even slate. But then they just have a bunch of role players. They have Ariza, they have Joe Johnson, they have PJ Tucker, they have Eric Gordon, they have Ryan Anderson, mm-hmm. they have Luke Mbamute, they have Gerald Green. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see how they match up against Golden State. And I know people have been there's some stat that keeps going on Twitter every time they win. It's something, there's something like 30-1 or 31-1 when all 3 of Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella play.
That's accurate.
So, like...
That seems significant.
Yeah. I mean, again, going back to the ESPN BPI rankings, or playoff odds or whatever, the Warriors right now, according to BPI, 42.1% chance of winning the NBA title. Houston's number two at 26.5. They're ahead of anyone in the Eastern Conference.
Well, that's pretty self-evident, though.
I guess, because if they beat the Warriors, they're going to beat anyone in the...
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the two best teams by far in the NBA are the Warriors and Rockets. Then there's a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And then we probably enter into Toronto territory there. But, I mean, let's not underestimate the gap there is from 2 to 3.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's... I mean, in any other year, the Rockets here would be championship favorites by a pretty substantial percentage, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it they just mesh. Here's the thing that I'm really concerned about if I'm a Golden State fan or a fan of everyone else. Eric Gordon has been somewhat pedestrian this year, percentage-wise.
Mm-hmm.
If when the playoffs roll around and he just start becoming the Eric Gordon of old, dude.
Yeah. I know. I mean, yeah, percentage-wise, he's been relative. I mean, he's shooting like 42% overall, 33 from three, but he's averaging almost 18.5, or he's averaging 18.5 a game. Like, right. That's a, you know, if Klay Thompson, or if, I mean, I'm assuming Klay's going to guard James Harden for most of that series, but if Klay Thompson shuts down James Harden, they have a Chris Paul, an Eric Gordon, a Trevor Ariza. They have other sources of offense now.
Right. Oh, yeah, they do. Like, and Gerald Green as well. Like, yeah. They can go super small. They even closed out recently with Lupa Mute at center.
Yes.
They can go super duper small and have a bunch of dynamic three-point shooters in there constantly, which is trying to beat Golden State with their own medicine, basically.
Yeah.
And, I mean... Obviously, we're all hoping that these two teams, and they are, they're going to end up in the conference finals, and that's going to be the real NBA finals.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to see what happens there. I think Houston is going to give Golden State a run for their money. I still don't have them coming out, yeah. But man, that series is going out. That's going to blow everybody's mind, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a phenomenal. I mean, there's a chance that Golden State still sweeps Houston. And I hope if that happens, no one says, you know, that, oh, that just proves Houston's are frauds. Because, no, like, this is the second best team in basketball. Let's give them credit.
You think, though? You think there's... I mean, that's interesting. I would... That's... See, I've sit here and gone, you know, I'm not willing to go that far and call Houston in the series. But I'm sure as hell not going dubs in four.
I mean, I wouldn't predict that. I just, there's a chance it happens. There's also a chance Houston slips the Warriors. Like, it any of this stuff could happen.
Well, theoretically, yeah. LeBron James could come to Philadelphia, but that's not going to happen. So,
oh, we'll get there, Mort. Don't you worry.
I know we are. I know we are, Brian.
No. I mean, I would guess that series goes at least six either way.
Yeah,
and then
I'm hoping for a seventh.
Yeah, right.
I'm hoping for a seven gamer.
Pray, God, start praying to the basketball gods now. Let's just.
Hey, look, with so many injuries we've gone through,
I know.
I think we deserve it.
Yeah,
for real. Deserve a seven game epic series.
We deserve, after all the injuries this year, we deserve seven game series in every single series except for the ones that are boring. But any good series, give us seven games, please.
I would. Be a supporter of that, as long as it comes with the caveat that no one goes down
right.
In said given same game, seven game series.
Fair point.
Yeah.
All right, Moit, hit us with your crush of the week.
Well, before I do,
okay.
I must have missed a report, but apparently Dwayne Wade is considering retirement. Yeah, I'm just reading this for the first time, so bear with me.
Okay.
Miami Heat guard Dwayne Wade told Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald that for the first time in his career, he is genuinely undecided whether he wants to play beyond this season. Wade has said that he'll only play for the Heat if he continues his career beyond this season. I don't know, the 36-year-old guard said. I have told everybody around me that I am taking it after this season. and go from there. It's the first year I've ever gone into the summer with that mindset. I always went into it as a free agent or opting out of a deal to get another deal. This is the first summer I can say I'm just going into the summer and see how I feel and see the position this organization is in and go from there. I'm not really concerned with it, honestly. I'm cool with whatever I decide to do. It will be my decision. So that's interesting. I mean, and it couldn't have happened at a greater time because I was actually thinking about writing a piece for FanRag about should Dwayne Wade hang them up. Mm. So he just he saved me the trouble.
There you go. Good work, Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, thanks, Dwayne. That's interesting because look, he hasn't been great since returning to Miami. Obviously, small sample size alert, but he wasn't great in Cleveland either. Like, he's taking a significant step down. Obviously, he's going to turn, 30? He turned 36? Or has turned?
Let me see.
He's 36. He's 36. He turned 36 in January. So, the timeline kind of fits. That's the age where you begin to reconsider, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, especially, I mean, he went ring chasing this year with Cleveland. That did not work out for him. I mean, what's the point in toiling away with a Miami team that, they'll make the playoffs most likely or will be in that 6-7-8 seed range for the next couple of years, but that Miami team is not winning unless they somehow get LeBron James back. So, yeah,
that could be so fun. LeBron spending a couple of years in Miami and then afterwards decides to wrap up his career in Cleveland again.
Yeah, just bounce back and forth. Yeah.
All right, my crush. David Nwapa, man.
I like it.
I mean, look, I got to give this guy credit. Look, he came in, the Bulls claimed him off waivers. The Lakers waived him in the offseason, and he's just come in, and he's been sort of like a high-rebounding Tony Allen-type guy for him. He's a great defender. He starts at small forward despite only being 6'4", but he's rebounding the basketball at an extremely high level. He's averaging 7.3 boards per 36 minutes. He's playing the baseline a lot like Ronnie Brewer back in the day. If you remember how Ronnie used to just lurk around the baseline all the time, It's really remarkable. And over the past four games, let me just pull these up here. Over the past four games, he's averaged 12.3 points, 7.5 rebounds, shooting 61% from the field, and he's finally started to show some three-point range. He went 3-for-3 from downtown against Philly, and he hit one against Brooklyn last night. So this is interesting. He's a free agent after this summer, this summer, I should say, and given his defensive prowess, his rebounding, and if he keeps hitting threes at a higher rate than he's used to, some team could offer him a really good deal.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been, I mean, you've been in love with him all year.
Yeah, I like him. I like the energy. I think he's a really underappreciated player overall. I liked him in LA too, but he only played 20 games for the Lakers, so You never really knew if he was, like, if that game was steady. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He feels like someone who's going to, like, someone's going to get him on the biannual exception, and he's going to outperform that contract immediately.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. I think this guy is definitely destined to have 10, 12 years in this league beyond this season. Like, the strength, the defense, the rebounding, that does not just go away.
Right.
The rebounding might as he ages, but the defense, like, Tony Allen is still, I mean, he was still being picked up by teams because, hey, defense.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I'm getting like some Seth Curry vibes from 2 years ago with him. Just like he put up numbers on a bad team, so people are gonna like kind of ignore him, and then some smart team is gonna swoop in, give him $3 or $4 million a year, and he's gonna be a valuable contributor.
I'm gonna tell you, I don't think the Bulls can afford to lose this guy. I think he should play a pretty big part in their rebuilding process. Mm. You don't find these type of guys, especially if they get them for a low price tag moving forward. You don't find those guys often.
That's true. That's very true. All right, Mort. For my crush, first I'm gonna cheat with one and give a shout out to Power Home Remodeling. And no, that is not an advertisement. Instead, it is a company based in Chester, Pennsylvania, that hung three billboards in Cleveland this week, asking LeBron James to come to Philadelphia, which is amazing. And apparently LeBron James responded to it today, and he said, it's actually very flattering that he's sitting here at 33 in his 15th year. And he's in my 15th year, and teams are guys. I don't want to say teams because that becomes tampering, but people in their respective city want me to play for them. That's cool, I think. That's dope. Should I start getting my LeBron James Sixers jersey ready more? Is it too early?
Well, I mean, you can, but first I'm going to need to, I need you to remove your penis from my face.
I'm just going to get it tattooed somewhere on my body. Just James 23 with a big Philadelphia Sixers logo instead.
Yeah. And then you should put, you know what you should put afterwards? You should just put like this tombstone of Ben Simmons development on it.
Yeah. Yeah, Kelly Scaletta from FanMag Sports, actually, he tweeted a poll yesterday, and he was asking, like, if the Sixers could sign one of these players to a four-year deal, who should it be? Ben Simmons they have Ben Simmons. LeBron James or Paul George. And I said, LeBron James is not signing a four-year deal anyway, so if it's a one-year deal versus LeBron for a four-year deal for Paul George, you take Paul George. But that said, if he really did do a four-year deal, you do LeBron. And you don't really, like, yeah, it might impede Ben Simmons' development. And, yeah, you know, you're probably paying $40 million for a 37-year-old LeBron. But
count them rings.
Right. The upside of the next 2 to 3 years makes whatever happens in that final year, who gives a shit? All of that said, I'm going to actually give a real crush as well. And I'm going to technically cheat. Because we're supposed to, I mean, you did well with David Nwaba. We highlight guys who don't get the attention they deserve. I'm going to cheat with Anthony Davis.
Oh, who's that? Because last time I picked someone, I think it was Jimmy Butler or someone. You started chastising.
You picked Kevin Durant.
What? Oh, yeah, Kevin Durant. Still. Fine, you get this one. Yeah. You get this one. Now we're off the star names.
That's fair. Yeah, hey. Anthony Davis went after Kevin Durant in the All-Star draft. Therefore, I'm still trailing behind you. But, I mean, after what he's done in the last... I mean, not only yesterday when he put up, a casual 53 points, 18 rebounds, and 5 blocks against Phoenix in a 9-point win. Like, he needed to do all of that. So the Pelicans have won 6 straight games. They're currently the 5 seed in the West. I'm going to read out Anthony Davis numbers during this 6-game win streak. 41.5 points on 54.2% shooting. 15 rebounds. 3.2 blocks. 3.0 steals. 2 assists. 1.5 threes. And 40.5 minutes per game. Like, he might break if he continues playing this 20 minutes. I'm very nervous about him lasting the rest of the season playing.
Oh, me too.
More than 40 minutes a game. But, oh my God. Like, 41 and 15?
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
I've been offline before we started recording, but I saw someone, Chris Towers of CBS Sports, I think tweeted that Anthony Davis was a top 5 player in the NBA and was getting crap for it. And he's like, look at these numbers. Like, he's putting up like almost 30 and 12 for the last, I think it was, let's see. Yeah. He was putting up over the past 2 seasons, 28.1 points and 11.5 rebounds, 2 blocks or more than 2 blocks, 2 assists, and 1.3 steals. Like, the question has never been with Anthony Davis. It's never been about his talent. It's just been, can he stay healthy? No,
yeah, exactly. He's only played 70-plus games in a season once.
Yeah.
And that was last year. But to be fair, I do believe his rookie season was in the shortened 66-game season. So that should be noted.
Was it? I thought that was...
Let's see, 2012. No, wait a second.
The lockout was the year before.
That was the year before. Yeah. Okay, so my point stands.
Yeah, he's
all right.
He's missed at least 14 games in every season other than last season.
Yeah.
But
yep, he has.
Knock on wood, I mean, he has played 54 games The Pelicans have 60. Played 60, so
yeah.
I'm going to knock on every piece of wood I have around me right now, but he would currently be on pace mm-hmm. to break
this including the one in your pants after talking yeah. about LeBron.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he's currently on pace to make it to 70, so hopefully the Pelicans don't continue riding him this hard, because
yeah, agreed.
I'm very scared for him making it through the next 6 weeks, but
he's averaging almost 37 minutes on the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Jimmy Butler territory. I know, and he's doing more now.
Career high.
After Boogie. After Boogie went down, he's doing a lot more.
Right. And he said this when Boogie went down. It's like, well, I've been in this situation before. It's just everything's on my shoulders. But he's taking that seriously. My gosh. It's really impressive.
Okay. Maybe we're being unfair, because Drew Holiday has actually had some pretty awesome performances. He dropped 36 the other day as well. Mm-hmm. So. Maybe we should. We've sleeping on Drew. Have you looked at Drew's line for the season?
Yeah.
He's averaging 19 a game.
Yeah. He's really good.
And so, good on you, Drew Holiday.
The Pelicans do have Emeka Okafor now, who they recently signed for the rest of the season.
Is it 2008 again?
You know what? Ironically, he's still the best Okafor in the NBA.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, that's not even wrong. Yeah. Yep.
On that note, I'm going to go drink some cyanide. But in the meantime, thank you all for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We would love any feedback. We're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian, and I still enjoy this C, FanRag. It's so utterly unnecessary, but I love it. Go for it.
Yeah. Don't get fired, Mort.
Don't get fired.